Hey there, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're digging into Sue Hamilton's Indian philosophy. Sophie, you read this one too, right? What struck you first?
Hey there, Sam, absolutely. What got me is how different this tradition is from Western philosophy. It's not starting with wonder and ending with a logical conclusion about reality. It starts with suffering and this urgent need for liberation.
Right, that's the hook. Western philosophy asks, what is real? But Indian philosophy asks, how do we get out of this endless cycle of birth, death, and rebirth? It's practical from the get-go.
Exactly. And the foundation is karma and rebirth. But it's not fate or cosmic punishment. It's cause and effect applied to the moral realm. Every action and thought creates an impression that shapes our future.
So it's like the universe keeps a ledger, but not a punitive one. It's more like a natural law. You plant a seed, you get a tree. And the cycle itself, samsara, is characterized by dukkha.
And dukkha is often translated as suffering, but it's really that pervasive sense of dissatisfaction. Nothing is stable, nothing lasts, and clinging to anything leads to pain. So the problem isn't what is real, but how do we get out of this mess?
And the earliest answer comes in the Vedas and Upanishads. At first, it was all about rituals and sacrifices to appease the gods and secure worldly benefits. But then the Upanishadic sages turned inward.
They realized that even a heavenly reward from sacrifice would eventually end. So they sought a complete escape. That's when they hit on the big insight, the individual self, the Atman, is identical with the ultimate reality, Brahman.
That's the aha moment. The Atman isn't your ego or personality. It's the pure consciousness beneath all thoughts. And Brahman isn't a personal god. It's the infinite reality underlying everything.
The world of multiplicity is Maya, an illusion. Suffering comes from identifying with our limited selves. Liberation, moksha, is realizing that Atman and Brahman are one. That art thou, as the Upanishads say.
But this non-dual view, Advaita Vedanta, isn't the only game in town. Around the 6th century BCE, Buddhism and Jainism come along and reject the Vedas and the idea of a permanent self.
The Buddha taught anatta, no self. What we call the self is just a bundle of 5 changing aggregates, form, sensation, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. There's no permanent core.
And clinging to that illusion of a self is the cause of suffering. His path is a middle way between indulgence and mortification. Through ethics, meditation, and wisdom, you extinguish the fires and reach nirvana.
Then Jainism goes even further. They believe every particle has a soul, and karma is like dust that weighs it down. Liberation is literally shedding that dust through extreme nonviolence and asceticism.
That's where ahimsa comes from. It influenced Gandhi. But then the Orthodox tradition fights back. They systematize the Upanishads and develop rigorous logic, leading to the 6 classical schools, or darshanas.
Darshana means view or vision. Each school offers a different perspective. Nyaya focuses on logic and epistemology. Vaisheshika categorizes reality into fundamental types.
Then Samkhya gives a dualistic cosmology with pure consciousness and primal matter. And yoga provides the 8-limb path to still the mind and realize the true self.
But the big one is Vedanta, and its greatest exponent is Shankara in the 8th century. He synthesizes Advaita into a logical masterpiece. Brahman alone is real, and the world is like mistaking a rope for a snake in the dark.
And liberation isn't something you attain. It's recognizing what's always been true. But not everyone agreed. Ramanuj argued for qualified non-dualism, where the soul is a part of God, not identical to him.
And Madhva went full dualist, saying God, soul, and world are eternally distinct. This debate between monists and dualists reflects a deep tension. Is ultimate reality impersonal or a loving God?
And the tradition didn't paper over these differences. It let them flourish. Even Mimamsa, which focuses on ritual interpretation, contributes to the philosophy of language.
What I love about Hamilton's book is that she shows these aren't ancient artifacts. They're living philosophies. Yoga, meditation, the concept of karma in pop culture, even the Buddhist no-self influencing modern psychology.
Yeah, it's not spectator sport. The goal is to transform your life, not win an argument. Every concept is a tool to help you see through the illusion of the separate self.
And the path is long, but the destination is always the same: freedom, peace, and unconditional happiness. It's a tradition that asks us not to believe, but to look and know for ourselves.
That's the takeaway for me. It's practical. It's about how to live, not just what to think. And that's why it's still so relevant.
And if you want to explore more, the whole library is on 7minutebooks.com/app with over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It's $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 for lifetime access. Indian philosophy is an invitation to see clearly, act wisely, and find peace. We'll see you in the next one.